The DeFalco Files is an entertainment-based program. Some memories of certain events might be fuzzy. All opinions are that of the host. Content might not be appropriate for children and some adults. Listener discretion is advised. And remember, the truth is here. Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting presents The DeFalco Files with FSW owner Joe DeFalco and your host, Matt Michaels.
Hey everybody, it's Matt Michaels here, and I am with FSW, Future Stars of Wrestling's very own Joe DeFalco. How you doing, Joe?
I'm doing good, but I keep noticing when you guys make the post, the F in DeFalco is capitalized. You guys don't capitalize it. It's taken me a while to like pay that much attention to it, but you know, you should get the star of the show's name right. D-E capital F-A-L-C-O.
Yeah, like any good Italian spells DeFalco.
Exactly.
I know it's gonna be my fault in the end, so I apologize to everyone listening, and I apologize to you, Joe, on behalf of us. And
let it happen again. You know, I'll move the DeFalco Files over to the Lawson programs. You know what I mean?
Oh man. So this week, I think you came up with a great idea.
What? You're breaking up.
Uh-oh. Okay. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Okay. Cool. All right. That must have been the stupid connection in this house.
Or it was David Lawson.
Yeah.
Terrorizing the feed.
He's figured out how to hack into my phone, so.
That's what I'm saying.
So you came up with a really good idea this week, Joe. I like where your mind was with this. In talking about gimmick shows, you've been, you know, very, I guess, successful and very prominent with some really good gimmick shows. And I know that we're going to kind of talk about how a show like that is very hard to do year to year and to achieve the same type of success.
Well, with the gimmick shows to gimmick matches, they're kind of two different, totally different ideas. When I started trying to come up with ideas, we wanted something that would pique the interest of the fans. And, you know, really one of the first things was when we did When Stars Collide, because that was when we worked with the Casablanca in Mesquite, to where they funded the entire show, but they wanted big stars.
Right.
So that was the first opportunity for us to use multiple stars on one event. Like, we would do a show, and Eugene was one of the first guys we used, and Aries was coming through town, and we used him. And actually, at the very first Sam's Town show, we had Alcatraz and Eugene as the main event. But coming up with the different ideas, we've been very fortunate, because if you look at all the other independent wrestling shows, I don't think there's any shows that stand out. Like, Ring of Honor has their shows, and it was kind of like based off the success that Ring of Honor would have running the big shows. And of course, WWE or WWF. You know, when you had the WrestleMania and the SummerSlam and the, you know, the Royal Rumble. You know, I remember when the Survivor Series was literally on Thanksgiving night.
Yeah.
You know, and thought that was a phenomenal idea. And, you know, they had their big four. And we always looked at, initially, when we were doing shows, we were doing a lot of them at the FSW Arena. Then when we got the Sam's Town gig, we were probably doing quarterly shows. So the idea initially was to try to get, you know, four concept type shows. I guess they should be called concept shows and not gimmick shows.
Sure.
Because a gimmick show is probably more like when TNA, which I still think is a great idea and I want to do it at the FSW Arena, is when they did Lockdown and every single match was a steel cage match.
Yeah.
We've been very fortunate with the Mecca and Natural Born Killers to where we've actually created two off brands that really didn't have a lot to do with the core base of FSW.
Yeah.
And then with FSW, we've, you know, basing everything off the anniversary show, that was always the number one appeal. So the first couple of years, you know, that was our big show. Then we were able to incorporate Against All Odds, Survival of the Fittest, and No Escape. Those were four shows. So instead of quarterly, now we have four. And then with Natural Born Killers and the Mecca, that's literally like eight shows a year.
Yeah.
To where, you know, we were able to do stuff. You know, one year we were able to do the Mecca and come back 2 weeks later at the Silverton and run a big casino event because it was differentiated. Because we saw the success of Ring of Honor running two shows in two nights in Vegas.
Yeah.
And we saw a lot of people that would stick around. And you have to make people want to come to something. They're, you know, you have your hardcore fans that are always going to come, but there's a large fan base that will not come unless there's something special going on.
What was the after? Okay, so obviously the anniversary show is the first thing because it's the anniversary. What was the next show to be implemented after you did the anniversary show?
Offhand, I can't tell you which one came first between Survival of the Fittest and Against All Odds. No Escape. Finally, after a few years, we built up the feud between Alcatraz and Tyshawn Prince.
Right.
And the only way to settle that was inside the steel cage. So we entitled it No Escape. Hey, you know, we got a cage match. No Escape. Sounds good enough. So at that point, we set a record for the biggest crowd we ever had. And everybody loved the idea. You know, it probably took 3 years into our existence because I know it was at the old school because what led into the steel cage match was a double pin, which at that point, Tyshawn Prince was undefeated and Alcatraz was the champion. So we were at the old FSW arena on Boulder Highway up until 2012. So that had to be in the first 2 or 3 years of our existence. So I would believe No Escape was probably the first one. And after the success of the first one, we decided to do something similar to War Games. We didn't have the two rings, but we tried. And it was a three-on-three match, which I believe was Tyshawn Prince and the Commandos, taking on the Reno Scum and Alcatraz.
Yeah, it was.
And it was basically submit or surrender. And we did it War Games rules. Two guys started. Every 5 minutes, another guy came in.
So, yeah, it looks like it was July of 2012 when No Escape first happened. And then it was January of 2013 for No Escape 2.
Which became every January. At that point, because initially we used to do New Year's resolution
on January.
Obviously, you can't do New Year's resolution in April. So, you know, it kind of wrote itself. But we kind of made New Year's resolution a smaller show that we still do at the FSW Arena, like seasons beatings that we do every, you know, December. And we base it around, you know, donation of toys. Those type of shows, as I said, aren't really gimmick shows, but they're the type of shows that I had said that everything was based around that. So every year you knew we had seasons beatings, and No Escape showed its success that eventually we've turned No Escape into its own entity, where now we generally do three cage matches on every show.
Yeah, and just looking at the War Games, yeah, the Commandos and Tyshawn went over on Scum and Alcatraz. But
yes, that's what led to Alcatraz's heel turn after he felt the Reno Scum didn't have his back as he was handcuffed to the cage.
Is, you know, are little nuances like that something that the guys come up with, or something that, like, yourself or Remy or, you know, one of the, lack of a better word, agents, you know, guys working with the matches coming up with?
I'll give these guys ideas of what I want in the match, but I remember Luster coming up to me with a metal spike and saying, hey, you know, because they wanted to do thumbtacks and didn't really want to ruin the canvas or whatever it was. I'm not sure what happened in that. I think Modest was against the thumbtacks. But we agreed that the metal spike to the head was okay.
Oh, man, that's just precious.
You got to make the tough decisions.
Yeah. Now, after No Escape 2, I'm seeing here, it was March 2014. Would you consider Twist of Fate basically a theme show because of the fact that it tied in with Matt Hardy? Or is that just one of those things that's more of a coincidence, or not coincidence, but just named after him because he's on the card?
Yes and no. The name was because Matt Hardy is known for the Twist of Fate, but in that show, we had a very interesting twist offhand. I can't even remember what it was because I remember it being Matt was the reason why, but we did a twist in the match. I'm not sure if it was Alcatraz who turned or somebody turned that was what was the true twist of fate and what everybody expected to see on that show.
The heavyweight title match was Alcatraz defeating Tyshawn.
There you go. So yeah, that was the twist, that Alcatraz aligned with Sal E, and they were in cahoots. And in the end, Tyshawn Prince, who thought he was with Sal E, was getting a little big for his britches. And Alcatraz saw the success that Tyshawn had with Sal E, and the deal was made with the devil. So that was actually the true twist of fate of that show.
It's kind of cool, too, on the show that you were able to get a match with Shelly Martinez going against Rebby. And was that something that did Matt, I'm assuming Matt didn't insist that Rebby wrestled on the show. How did that come about that she ended up actually wrestling?
Well, that was actually Rebby versus Shelly, too. Because in Mesquite, at the When Stars Collide 2, Matt Hardy was in the main event against Bryce Harrison for the No Limits Championship, and that was the very first time we used Matt. And Matt had suggested, we were talking about doing a women's match, and, you know, he made us believe that Rebby was a professional wrestler.
Yeah.
So we ended up having Shelly, who was involved with the following, and Bryce. We figured that was a perfect situation to have Rebby versus Shelly Martinez one, which quickly became the most viewed match in FSW history on the YouTube. So since they were going to both be out here again, and we very rarely did any women's matches, and a lot of the fans used to say, hey, we love FSW, but where are the women's matches? So we figured, you know what? Let's also give it to the Vegas crowd. And it's also one of the top 3 to 5 matches watched in FSW history on YouTube. So it was pretty successful having so Rebby Sky can basically say that she has two of the most watch matches in the history of FSW.
In general, when you're working with someone like Matt, or anyone who's of Matt's stature, is it something where you find that most of them are very willing to listen to you and play ball? And was there ever a situation where, you know, someone of a bigger name did not agree with where you were going direction-wise?
Well, at When Stars Collide, the original one, John Morrison informed me beforehand that he wouldn't put over Kenny.
Wow. Okay. Wow.
And but that was already decided beforehand. John was very protective. He had just come off, you know, a big run with WWF, and he felt, you know, he could charge top dollar, and he felt it was very important for him to stay strong and, you know, not go out and lose every time he got booked outside, you know,
right,
one of the bigger promotions. And at the time, I didn't understand it. That was one of the first big name guys, you know. Earlier, we had dealt with Eugene, and he had no problem, you know, doing business. The funny thing is, you say that, I had actually had Bryce Harrison pinning Matt Hardy. Because, of course, I didn't expect Matt to be around very long.
Right.
And as I'm watching the match, it ended up being a DQ. And I'm sitting back there like, what the fuck? And my first thought is, well, Matt probably didn't want to put over Bryce that way. But he never informed me, which I thought was extremely weird. But after the match, Bryce came up to me, you know, and he said he made that decision that he felt, you know, it would be best not to do that finish.
Right.
Which, in hindsight, worked out well because we ended up reaching an agreement with Matt after that fact to have him wrestle 4, 5, 6 shows for us. And him losing in the No Limits match might have taken a little bit away of him actually winning the FSW Heavyweight Championship. So again, a change that wasn't regulated by me ended up being a move that worked out for us moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty remarkable. And, you know, this is something I got to ask you, just looking over some of the cards. What is the mentality behind, your thinking behind, when you have a guy wrestle 2 matches or 3 matches on a card? Because I've seen a couple times where, you know, a guy had been in like 2 different matches. Is that a device you like to use, or when it comes to stuff like, you know, the tournaments, have you been a fan of basically seeing a wrestler wrestle multiple times on a show?
Only when it makes sense. You know, if you're going to have 2 matches with no meaning, no tournament, just to have a guy wrestle 2 times really doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
You know, I remember after working with Lance Hoyt in Arizona, we brought him in, and he worked Survival of the Fittest. And that Survival of the Fittest, there was a tournament. And Lance Hoyt beat Graves in the first round, and then he had to wrestle Tyshawn Prince, which turned into like a double DQ or something like that. And, you know, the concept was, in those situations, in tournaments where, you know, Morrison won the Mecca Grand Championship in a 3-way with Brian Cage and Chris Bay, that was a 4-way, but Teddy Hart got injured in his match with PJ Black. Well, if we're going to do an 8-man tournament, I've always felt that going from 8 to 4 to 2 is 3 matches. Now, first off, guys are generally a little more okay with working 2 matches for their payday. 3 matches, they're going to want to get paid more.
Right.
And the three matches in an eight-man tournament takes up seven matches on the entire card. So even if you go to nine matches, it doesn't leave very much.
Yeah.
So when we did it in Phoenix, we had an eight-man tournament with the IWF down to four. It was Drew McIntyre, Brian Cage, Chris Hero, and UHA Nation, now known as Apollo Crews. So we followed the same formula when we had the Mecha Grand Championship, to where Bay beat Scorpio Sky, Morrison beat Strickland, and you know Teddy Hart beat PJ Black, and Brian Cage beat Hammerstone. So we felt it was four exciting matches, but now we go into an elimination style match.
Yeah.
With four guys. And because of the injury to Teddy Hart, we ended up just doing that the one pinfall wins, which at that point made it more exciting because it was one. With the four down to three, down to two, you know, we're hoping that it builds the excitement of a match. But with a three-way, it's kind of weird to do an elimination-style three-way match. So,
sure. If you had to, like, say, what is the most difficult part about putting together a show that has one basic theme to it? Is there something that is kind of an obstacle in putting a show together? Or is it you already have the seeds planted, so it's kind of easy to just kind of blossom it out of that?
Well, for example, we have a show called Against All Odds. It's a very simple concept. It's Against All Odds. Instead of just doing a rumble, we do a 30-man rumble where you have to win the rumble to then get a title match in the main event. So that's a show that we're only going to have four or five matches, and two of them are based around the rumble.
Right.
So it's pretty simple. You know, we've done times in the past where the last two eliminated had a match.
Yeah.
You know, to where, you know, I remember we had done that on a couple of different occasions, to where Brian Cage ended up wrestling like Tyshawn Prince because Lance Hoyt won the Rumble and he wrestled Matt Hardy in the main event.
Right.
But yeah. Then when you have Survival of the Fittest, every match conceptually you're trying to think of some ideas. I was a huge fan of the old style, old school Survivor Series match, 4-on-4. You know, I'd even come up with the team names and all the other stuff. And we would always try to do a couple of those matches. You know, one match I remember having with Kevin Cross, who was stuck in Japan. He was wrestling, and it was like we had no idea. We didn't think he was going to make it in time. So it was Cross, the Commandos, and Lance Hoyt against a tag team called Cold Cold World that features Will Hobbs, who's actually going to be wrestling on AEW tomorrow. And trying to think who the other guys were in the match. But it was a Chris Masters was one of the other guys. And needless to say, it might have been Tyshawn Prince on one side. It was 4-on-4 either way. And Kevin showed up late. But conceptually, that was the main event. And we've had, what you say, gimmick matches because of Survival of the Fittest. What fits that type of match? So we had done where Jack Manley beat Saiku for the No Limits title. We did a 30-minute Iron Man match because it's Survival of the Fittest. That's the type of match that, you know, fits into the mold of what we're trying to do conceptually for that show.
Yeah. What is your favorite match? Is it the Survivor Series style? Is it a rumble? What is your favorite type of match?
My favorite match by far is the Against All Odds Rumble because we have 30 guys in there and we're trying to tell as many stories as we can.
Right.
We're trying to set up new feuds. So that's one thing that we're trying to do. We're, you know, we're trying to set up who's going to go and win, who's the guy that we want to push really strong. Kevin Cross's first time in, didn't win the match, was early on, and he was a guy who maybe threw out 8 or 9 guys.
Yeah.
A couple years ago, we had a huge battle that ended up with Sefa, Shogun, and Chris Bay, where Chris Bay ended up winning.
Yeah.
And all those things set the tone for other things, and trying to give some new blood the opportunity to shine, where that was probably Sefa's coming out party. That was Shogun's coming out party. Last year, you know, it was supposed to be Hiro Lu's coming out party, but unfortunately, a couple of things happened in that match, and he didn't look as strong as we wanted him to be. You know, a few times he was supposed to throw some people out, and he was out of place, and other people threw him out and kind of reamed him after that match. Like, what are you doing, bro? This is like the opportunity to get you there, and you weren't in the right position, and other people took that opportunity.
Yeah.
And there was a time, there was a spot for where he was supposed to throw out 6 or 7 guys, and I think he threw out 1 or 2.
Is there anyone that you can think of in that particular match, in the Rumble match, that stands out to you as someone that started as maybe, like, you know, on the lower rung, but used that battle royal opportunity to get themselves to a higher spot?
Well, as I said, with Kevin Cross, that was like his real first big opportunity on a casino show.
Mm-hmm.
And he went in there, and he was known as my personal assistant, and he was protected. But he went in that match, and if you didn't know who he was before that match, you certainly knew who he was after that match. You know, guys like Graves, guys like Hammerstone, you know, as they were coming up, you know, they had, you know, great opportunities because they were the guy, a Shogun Jones.
Yeah.
You know, a guy who went from Rookie of the Year to, you know, winning the Against All Odds Rumble, only to lose out because he got jumped before the match. Well, the year before was his opportunity. You know, we've had a couple opportunities where guys started in the first couple of positions to where that they got close to the end. But the one thing about the Rumble is a lot of opportunities for people to cash in were successful.
Yeah.
You know, I remember a guy who was perceived as a low to mid-card guy, part of the Vegas Originals, Jason Partain. He won the Rumble thanks to help from Rush and had a damn good main event with Kevin Cross, and that was probably the only main event that Partain really was ever in FSW, but he definitely looked strong, and because the card around it and it was the show, we felt that was a good opportunity to give somebody fresh the chance to go after the heavyweight champion.
Sure.
Because we're always looking to try to find, like, who's that the new flavor of the month. You know, the next big thing, as they like to say. And we're always trying to build and look. And as we said, a Hiro Lu is a guy that we definitely have our eyes on. And once we get back to running shows, you know, we're going to give him good opportunities. He's going to get chances. And he already has worked a guy like Graves, but he's going to get those chances again with way more experience. And let's see, you know, if he can hang with the big boys, just like Shogun had some early matches with Graves early in his career. He had an excellent match with Hammerstone at another created event that we had, Beers and Body Slams, taking off the bar wrestling thing. And, you know, those were a couple of, that was a show I totally forgot about.
Yeah.
And again, that was another brand. And then, you know, I think we'll spend some time on Natural Born Killers because I think that has been a huge success, and probably features the greatest moment in FSW history. So, you know, it's obvious, like, there's things you're going to remember, and in most cases, the things you're going to remember are from the biggest shows we've had. You know, nobody knew it at the time, but the Reno Scum versus Ricochet and Rich Swann at the anniversary show, probably our fifth or sixth, was who are these guys to, like, holy shit, these guys are amazing.
Do you think that the fan reactions to the particular events are a motivating factor to go forward with it the next year? And do you feel the pressure going into the next one?
Well, I know for a fact whenever we do the Rumble, we get a lot of people saying, oh, I love the Rumble match, love the Rumble match. How could you not? Yeah. You know, you get to see 30 guys, you know, 15 of them at least you think have a shot. And as I said, guys that, you know, come in early, last long, interact with somebody, which leads into a feud, or somebody tosses somebody that looked like they had a shot, and everybody loves the Rumble. No escape. Generally, we built stuff up. You know, we've had Kevin Cross and Matt Hardy in a steel cage match. We've had Hammerstone and John Morrison in a steel cage match. You know, we had Tyshawn and Alcatraz, obviously, in a cage match. We've had some tag team matches, or the Whirlwind Gentlemen against the Bonus Boys. Oh, no, sorry, it wasn't Bonus Boys. It was Sweet and Sour when it was Saiku and Sugar Brown having the tag belts. And there's been so many great matches, impromptu matches, that the Bonus Boys won the tag belts when they weren't even on the card against the Players Club. A fight on a football field led to them fighting inside the cage and turning it into a match. So there's a lot of moments inside the steel cage that I remember, because those are special matches. You know, we probably had maybe 15, maybe 12 steel cage matches. I would say closer to 15 to 20. And, you know, I always talk about Greg Romero and Rush, probably the shortest steel cage match in the history of professional wrestling. Damian Drake winning the No Limits title. There's a lot of great moments in No Escape. And then, you know, Survival of the Fittest. You know, Jack Manley and, you know, Saiku in a 30-minute Ironman match was one of the best matches that year. And, you know, so many good things came off of that. And not to say, of course, that they haven't, but the Mecca, you know, it's had some of the biggest matchups anybody's ever seen.
Yeah.
You know, Keith Lee, Brian Cage, and Sammy Callahan, to this day, one of the best matches in FSW history was at the Mecca. In most companies, you just have shows. You just have shows.
Right.
And part of the reason why FSW stands out is the fans know what No Escape is. They know it's a show that usually has three steel cage matches on it. They know Against All Odds is the Rumble. They know Survival of the Fittest. The anniversary is just a potpourri of everything that happened in the year. The Mecca is, you know, the biggest name wrestlers in the world wrestling Ring of Honor weekend, and hopefully in the future AEW weekend. And then we have Natural Born Killers, which is an event based off, you know, the popularity of MMA and blood sport. And it's a combination in two shows. I'm not sure who's had bigger names on it than we have.
Well, let me ask you, yeah, let's get into that a little bit with Natural Born Killers. How did the concept come about? And I know that was also something that was co-produced. How did that all come together, and what is it like, you know, when you're working with other promotions to pull off an event?
Well, a few years before Natural Born Killers, Kevin Cross was very big in the MMA you know, that's where he got his start. He was doing a lot of that before he got into wrestling training. And once he started wrestling, you know, he had an idea for like some kind of Pancrase kind of show, something similar to that. But we weren't really ready to pull it off. Then Bloodsport came out, I guess Matt Riddle, and they did it WrestleMania weekend. GCW produced
it. Right.
And they brought in some big name guys, and they did it on WrestleMania weekend. And of course, it was successful because there's 100 shows WrestleMania weekend, and everything's successful. So I had an idea. I said, hey, Kevin, UFC does their WrestleMania UFC fight week in Las Vegas. I said, hey, how cool would it be if we had a show? One of the guys who became a partner in it, Aaron Porter, or Poirier, I don't know, he's from Louisiana, they have weird names. And I said, like Bloodsport, I wanted to have an idea of like what would be a really cool name moving forward. And we had thrown about a couple of names, and nothing was very good. You know, trying to just come up with something. Hey, what's another Jean-Claude Van Damme movie we could use the name for? And then Aaron sent me the poster of Natural Born Killers with Woody Harrelson on there. And I'm like, this is perfect. It's like Kevin Cross, the bald head, the jacket. We, you know, Joey made the poster, and we're like, hey, fight week, we need to bring in some MMA guys. And at the time, Stefan Bonner was already training with us.
Yeah.
And Stefan Bonner's credited with, you know, taking UFC to the next level when him and Forrest Griffin fought in The Ultimate Fighter. So we have now Stefan Bonner as part of the show. And, of course, we have Cross as part of the show. So now we're trying to work, you know, who we're going to bring in. Simon Gotch was a guy that we talked to a lot on Twitter. And he kind of ran that gimmick of a shoot fighter gimmick in MLW, the Vaudevillians. So he was a guy that we added to it. But the big coup was getting Frank Mir.
Yeah.
And at that point, Frank had decided that he wanted to get involved in professional wrestling. And Austin Aries, he had brought him down once or twice to train at the FSW school. So there was a show at the Rio. They ran some MMA stuff that Vampiro was pretty much in charge of. So they hired Joey to do the photography, which was great. He got paid one out of the four shows, and they still owe him a good amount of money. But Frank Mir was the announcer for the event. So when I saw him, I'm like, hey, Frank, I got this idea. You know, any chance I can get your number, blah, blah, blah. He was like, oh, yeah, definitely be interested. You know, at that point, we were talking about him announcing, maybe, you know, because he was a commentator, loved to have him fight. But this is Frank Mir about working, you know, a MMA style wrestling event. So I gave him a call. He was interested, but he was being represented by Aries. Aries kind of handled his wrestling stuff. So we were able to work out a deal to where Aries would accompany Frank Mir to the ring. And part of the deal was when Kevin and Bay worked at the anniversary show, Aries and Frank Mir would come out and basically set up the Natural Born Killers events. And it was like they came out. Holy shit. Aries hadn't been seen in a while. Frank Mir's this big fucking dude. Like, holy shit, that's Frank Mir. And now all of a sudden it's like, wow, this card is really, really shaping up. Then we got Tom Lawler, who was a UFC fighter, trained with us after he was first leaving the UFC, wrestled a couple of shows, and blew up big time.
Yeah.
So here's a guy who is a two-sport superstar. Dave Mazzani, who wrestles for us, another guy. He works at Couture Gym. Randy Couture's son, we were trying to get Randy, but in turn we got Ryan Couture.
Yep.
So now this show is loaded with MMA guys, and then I reached out and finally, like 10 days before the show, because we knew he was going to be out here because they had the UFC Hall of Fame, we secured Dan Severn for the show. And it's like, holy shit, this fucking show is stacked. And we wanted this show to be this small, dingy, old school type of show and felt Samstown was way too big. So we decided we were going to run at the FSW Arena. And we took out the guardrails. And anybody who's been there know it's a tight fit to get about 180 to 200 people. We're kind of squeezing people in. So what we did was we removed the guardrails. We put two rows of seats on both sides by the walls where there was generally only one. And then we added as many seats as we could in the back. We added another row in front of the bleachers. And we somehow probably squeezed in 270, 280 for a sold-out event.
Yeah.
That the main event at this point is Dan Severn against Killer Cross at the time. And a few weeks before the show, Cross was like, oh, Severin's great, but I'm working on something. And then he comes up to me and he says, bro, I got a guy for Natural Born Killers, but I can't tell you who it is. And it's a great story because I've told it a few times. And I'm thinking, man, it's UFC Fight Weekend, Chuck Liddell, Tito Ortiz. Those are guys that are around. Tito loves wrestling. Holy shit, man. Tito Ortiz and Kevin Cross. Man, this would be fucking great. And then all of a sudden, like a week or two before the show, all of a sudden Cross walks in with Disco Inferno, and he introduces me to Cain Velasquez. And Cain is about to do some stuff with AAA. And we're like, oh, shit, it might be Cain Velasquez. We have no idea. Now it's the day of the show. And I told the story on one podcast, and I kind of didn't promote it because I said the amount, so I probably shouldn't say the amount. So Kevin Cross says, believe me, it wasn't that much. So Kevin says, hey, bro, I got the guy. I need you to put X amount of dollars away. And let me just say right now, it isn't even four figures, okay? He said, you're going to wish you gave him four figures, which is $1,000. So I'll let you know it was less than $1,000,
yeah.
Okay? So now it's like, shit, who is it? Oh, I can't tell you. And I'm like, what the fuck? He can't tell me who it is? Like, is it going to be some jobber UFC guy that nobody cares about? So it is now show day. We're ready to roll. Dan Severn's in the house. He's setting up the merch area. He's got his own guy trying to sell some shirts. And I'm in the production office. We're probably 20 minutes, 15 minutes away from the doors opening. And my son Joey walks in. I swear to God, literally with tears in his eyes. And he says to me, and I quote, did you see who it is? Almost like teary-eyed, and I'm like, is it Tito? Chuck Liddell? He's like, no, it's Moxley. And I'm like, get the fuck out of here. I walk to the back, and it's like, holy shit, it's John Moxley and Renee Young. And then Kevin walks over. I walk over there. He introduces me. Hey, how you doing? Blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm like, thanks for doing this. You know, it's like, holy shit. So we have a sold-out event, and nobody in the world knows that John Moxley's there. So, or Dean Ambrose at the time, I think he was more or less going by. You know, we have the match. Kevin gets dismantles Severin with a high kick to the side of the head, and it was like, wow, that was kind of quick. You know, Severin cuts a promo. You know, he puts over Cross strong, and Kevin's about to start talking, and then the music hits. A couple people made some noise, but nobody really knew, and then all of a sudden he stood back to the ring, you know, thing, and it was like a wave.
Yep.
Like, you know, when people do the wave, it was a wave of, like, every single person in the house, like, holy shit, it's fucking Dean Ambrose in the FSW arena. Which, it was crazy because, like, 2 weeks earlier was the anniversary show, and people were like, holy shit, I can't believe Frank Mir and Austin Aries. What a great FSW moment. And the anniversary, we literally sold out and had almost 1,000 people there. And literally 2 weeks later, we now had the new greatest moment in FSW history.
Yeah.
And it was just amazing. Like, the Twitter went crazy. You know, YouTube, you know, we had 500,000 views in a couple of days. And it was just like Moxley cut the promo afterwards. And boy, you know, what a moment that was. And it really solidified Natural Born Killers as an event that I believe was as good or better than Bloodsport.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt. You know,
and Tom Lawler and Douglas James, they killed it too.
Exactly. I was just going to say the amazing part was the undercard. That Lawler match was great. You know, the opener with Ryan Couture versus Mazzani. I mean, it was
right.
Solid.
Here's a guy who never did any wrestling. Like,
yep.
He got, like, a crash course, but it was like, you know what? We're not going to teach you how to wrestle, bro. You're an MMA guy. You do what you do. Dave Mazzani can handle himself in the ring. Besides being good friends, Mazzani was the EFC lightweight champion in South Africa, which is one of the biggest promotions outside of UFC. So we weren't concerned with it. But we were stunned, and the crowd for the event was so great that when Ryan Couture took down Dave Mazzani just for a takedown, the crowd was so receptive, and it was like, wow,
yep.
This is like a totally different event than FSW has ever done, and here is another brand that we were able to create, you know, out of that all. And it was like, we had the women's match with Kira Batara and Gina Mazzani, yeah. Who was a UFC fighter. You know, Kira came off like 6 wins in a row on, you know, Combate Americas. So these were all real deal,
yep.
More MMA fighters than wrestlers.
Yeah. Yeah, and it really, the atmosphere that was created, there was probably not a better decision that you made than having it there as opposed to the bigger casino venue.
It was great to have, yeah. In the FSW arena, which kind of led to Natural Born Killers too.
How do you start generating the idea of what can we do to at least match that first one? I mean, because it's tough when you look at up and down. And I'm going to say, anyone listening, if you haven't seen it or haven't seen any of the FSW shows or some of them, go out of your way to Fight TV and check out some of these, you know, past shows, because there's some really good stuff like Natural Born Killers. And how do you get into that anticipation and execute a show that's the level of the first one?
Well, first what we do is we take what we saw from the first show. We know that there's no way we're going to top Moxley versus Cross.
Right.
You know, there's nothing we can do about it. We try to reach out. He's now in AEW doing things in New Japan. It was just impossible to lock in Moxley for the event. So we look at what we saw, and we saw Douglas James and Tom Lawler kill it. And what was great about that finish was out of all the MMA and the fighting, Lawler ends up pulling out a Tombstone Piledriver to beat Douglas James with it. That probably got the biggest pop of the night before Cross and Moxley.
Yeah.
So now we know Douglas James has got to be on the show. No doubt about it. Stephen Bonner, he's the UFC fighter. Okay? He beat Sin Bodhi.
Yeah.
In the first show. One.
Yep.
And now here's a top UFC guy. You know, we got to have Bonner. You know, in the past, we tried to have Baroni, but he's so out of his mind, that was impossible to happen. So now we're looking. Well, we got to have Tom Lawler on the show. But then Tom Lawler had a wedding in Florida, and he couldn't make it. So that was extremely disappointing. But then I was reading, which I had no knowledge of, because he helped train at FSW, WWE Cruiserweight Champion, you know, one of the best indie wrestlers ever, TJ Perkins, was offered a contract by Bellator. And I'm like, TJ Perkins? So we hit him up and we felt, hey, what a matchup. Two, like, cruiserweight, lightweight guys. So that's how we made the first match, which was TJ Perkins versus Douglas James.
Yeah.
So we knew we had a great match there. Then at the time, we had been wanting to use him. We also know his jiu-jitsu background. So we had reached out and we acquired MVP.
Yeah.
And we were going to have MVP wrestle for the heavyweight championship, even though it was a natural born killer show, against Graves. Graves recently had won the heavyweight championship, and we felt, hey, this would be a great title defense. Initially, we were going to do MVP and Bonner, but then we switched because we wanted to have Graves. The day before the show, Graves had contracted pneumonia. Mono.
Mono, okay.
He had gotten mono and was contagious, and he said he couldn't come. So then we had to switch back, and then we had MVP versus Bonner. Austin Aries hits me up like a week before. He's like, hey, bro, you know, I was thinking, and he was like, you know, I'd love to have a shot on the show. And it's like, well, adding Austin Aries to a card, you know, not a MMA fighter, but hey. So we ended up booking him, which was kind of a little mismatch in sizes, against Simon Gotch.
Right.
And, you know, we were there with that. We had Kira Batara once again. Gina Mazzani was unavailable. We didn't really want to do a rematch. So we had the FSW Women's Champion, Lacey Ryan, stepped in.
Yep.
And that match was made. And it was funny. We were bandying about. The problem was, who is Kevin Cross going to wrestle? And before that, he had made a recommendation, which I was kind of thought was kind of weird. But he was talking about Bugatti versus Cutthroat Cody. And Cody came back to work a feud with Bugatti. Injuries happened. They never really followed up on it. So we ended up making that the opener, which didn't disappoint at all. But the question was, who was going to work Cross? You know, we were throwing out some names. People were unavailable. And I remember hitting up Twitter and asking the fans, you know, who would they like to see? And there was a guy that a few years ago was highly recommended to me by Brian Cage, but we had never used him yet. His name was Chris Dickinson. And Chris Dickinson was out of the East Coast, you know, making a name for himself, you know, wrestling, starting to wrestle a little bit out on the West Coast. But he was a Rhode Island guy, East Coast dude, Massachusetts. And I hit up Kevin. I'm like, hey, what do you think about working Dickinson? And he was like, oh, I'd love to work Dickinson. That'd be awesome. So, again, thanks to Twitter and somebody recommending it, and then they recommend it. And, of course, Dickinson is basically tagged on the tweet, and he's like, yeah, I'd love to do that. And we had, like, one more spot, and I always was a big fan of Tito Escondido, who I like a lot.
Yeah.
And him with Che Cabrera and a tag team I think are awesome. But I had heard Tito was really, really strong martial arts background. So we were looking for a guy, and there was a guy, because of Graves dropping out, it left an open spot because Tito was going to fight Bonner. But then Bonner stepped into MVP, which now left Tito without an opponent. So on the last minute, there was a local guy who used to be from SoCal doing a Highlander gimmick, Calder McCall, who was also, you know, a big MMA dude and, you know, fights, you know, for real on the side. And, you know, they had a tremendous matchup. And just like with the Mecca, after the first show of superstars, we still brought in a good amount. But, you know, despite how good it was and how it was such a small arena, we didn't really make anything from the Natural Born Killers. So we realized we had to thin the budget a little bit to where, because we realized we could only fit X amount of people in the FSW arena and we didn't want to go to Sam's Town. So we were able to, you know, knock a few dollars off, but still have a card that had Austin Aries, MVP, Stephen Bonner, Kevin Cross, Chris Dickinson, Simon Gotch. Yeah. I'm even sure pretty much Dave Mazzani worked that show. You know, I'm not. Oh, he worked Ryan Walker, another Bellator guy.
Yeah.
Who fell in love with wrestling after that. We're still working on getting Ryan Walker to maybe be part of the faction that hasn't happened yet, the Fight Club, featuring fighters, MMA guys, boxers, wrestlers. It's just a group of, you know, legit badasses, you know. So, again, you know, Ryan adapted very quickly to that. And it's like, which we've seen, guys with the MMA background and martial arts have seemed to be quite successful. And now the big question becomes Natural Born Killers 3. It was basically, you know, helped promoted by Cross. Right. And now, obviously, with NXT, Cross is not available. So the idea and the concept, I still believe, is extremely strong. Because we didn't sell all those tickets just because Kevin Cross was on the show. It was a combination. It was something different and something that was appealing. Especially one thing I noticed at Natural Born Killers 1 and 2 through our PayPals and all the other stuff, that there was a lot of sales to people that were not generally wrestling fans at all and had never been to any of our shows.
Right.
So we were able to carve a new niche and find new people that were going to support what we were doing. And at the end of the day, you know, they really, really enjoyed what they saw. So, you know, Natural Born Killers 3, well, who the fuck knows what's going on here with this, you know, COVID shit that just continues to never end. And it's like, you know, we're all chomping at the bit. We're ready to go. It's like, I really don't want to do the anniversary show in March and then have another anniversary show 2 months later, you know?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, you're right. The anniversary show in March would essentially be the anniversary show for the shutdown. You know, it's...
You know, how do you not have an anniversary show, you know? Yeah. It was like, hey, the first show back will be the anniversary. But we were assuming it'll be July or August.
Yeah.
But now it's looking like it won't be till at least like November to do a bigger show. You know, sure, we'll probably be a lot sooner be doing one of the FSW arena, but we're not going to do our anniversary show in front of 100 people.
Right. Right. And, you know, the way things are going, yeah, it's going to be happy anniversary season's beatings show. You know,
yeah,
it's unbelievable. When someone like Cross comes to you with something like an idea of, you know, for Natural Born Killers, how many times do you think that you've actually pulled the trigger on someone's idea like that? Or is it usually something that,
well,
you know,
again, I'm not really sure it was his idea. Like he had thoughts of possibly doing something down the line that never really materialized. I guess it was both our ideas because, you know, his idea, I'm not sure if it was more of a match or a couple. You know what I mean? I'm not sure it was the concept of the show is a lot different. Like he wanted, you know, almost UWFI type shows from Japan.
Yeah.
He was big into that. And, you know, he wanted, you know, that type of match. But the concept of the show was really, again, taking his idea and expanding upon it. So I guess I give him credit for the idea, and then I think I give myself credit for expanding it and making what it became, because I'm not sure there would have been as much interest in what he was looking to do. As I was thinking about doing it, how can we make this more, you know, an event that the masses would want to be interested in?
Right. So do you think that fans, do you think they understand how actually creative the process really is? Because essentially that's, you know, you look at groups like the Beatles, that's how they came up with some of their best songs, is through collaboration, where maybe one thing happened that planted a seed for another thing and it grew into what you see as a final product.
Well, that's how it usually works, because in all honesty, that's the reason why I try to talk to people, not only Remy, when we're doing the following stuff with Bryce Harrison, and I like to tell the ideas of what I got to the guys working those matches. Like, generally, I'm not going to say to Cutthroat Cody, hey, I have an idea for this match between the Bonus Boys and the Whirlwind Gentlemen. It's, hey, Cody, I have this idea of you and Jacob Austin Young, and we're going to do a steel cage match to kind of make that number one contender against the Bonus Boys, and this is what I'm looking at. And then now their minds start to work, and now they'll give me ideas of what they're looking for. Now, when we're doing a match and it's Lights, Camera, Faction versus Hyper Quick versus the Unguided, you know, versus Sky High, there's going to be less input from those guys because most of them are barely into it, and I have no trust in them pulling out ideas out of their ass, that generally the younger guys are only looking to do something that's going to make themselves look good.
Right.
While I know the Bonus Boys and Death Proof are looking to have the best match on the show, and you can't have the best match on the show if you don't let the other team do anything.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's Cody's idea to get Dollar Bill stapled to his head. You know, that's not my idea. Hey, is it okay if I'm like, sure, that's a great idea.
You know, just hearing the words, hey, is it okay, is just one of the funniest concepts to me. Like, getting approval for getting something stuck onto your body in front of a crowd. That is just...
Yeah, like Funny Bone, he doesn't even ask. He just...
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Like, he may say, hey, bro, we're gonna have thumbtacks, okay? And I'll be like, oh, okay.
What would you say, out of everything that you've ever done, or, you know, anyone's approached you with, what is probably the craziest concept that someone's brought up?
The craziest concept. That is definitely an interesting question, because it hasn't come to fruition, but our manager, Primo Pulpo, has this concept idea that I really don't want to disclose because we haven't done it.
Yeah.
And if we do, it would be a surprise.
Yeah.
But I have an idea in my head where I want Primo to go. I'll let it out of the bag. It ain't the biggest deal in the world. But moving forward, Lights, Camera, Faction is just going to consist of Braxton, Fresco, and Watson. It just feels that Braxton does all the talking anyway, that having two guys that are managerial makes no sense.
Yeah.
So, you know, I told Primo, so he's kind of coming up with some ideas, and one of them is fucking crazy weird that I don't know if it's crazy weird enough to do, because I have an idea in my own head of where I'd like to go that's kind of similar to what he came up with, but a little more realistic.
Yeah.
You know, like, watching wrestling in 2020 was different than in 1988, when you can have Kamala,
yeah,
and you could have these savages from a third world country that can't speak the language, you know. Basically, the manager's the only one who can contain them. The only person that I thought was able to do that was Umaga. He was so talented that I was able to believe he was this Samoan savage that had, you know, unbelievable strength and power, but was only able, you know, he's not George the Animal Steel.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's like, so doing concepts that aren't realistic make it difficult for me, because I look at it as a fan, and if I look at it as, Jesus Christ, that's fucking horrendous. Like, how stupid is that? When that comes up in my head, you know, it makes me wonder. And it's like, but the idea that he has some good basis to it. And it's like, now can we tweak it to keep everybody happy and it actually be successful?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's very, you know, it's intriguing when you get to, you know, kind of hear that even in the vagueness of it, it still shows how that process works. And I think that's really amazing. And a shout out to Primo. Get better, heal up. You know, no one likes an injury, so.
Hey, that's why he's a manager. He takes a bump and he gets hurt.
He gets hurt.
Well, you know, what else is?
Hell,
go look at the tape of Sally not training and learning how to take any bumps, and he cracks his skull on the concrete floor. You know, that's what the managers are for. Comedy moments like that.
Oh, man. What would you say, as we're kind of getting close to a little bit of a wrap up here, what would you say has been your favorite moment from, you know, all these different cards? What sticks out to you as probably your favorite out of all of it?
Well, I can't give you one favorite. I got to probably give you at least five.
Sure.
You know, Alcatraz and Tyshawn Prince at No Escape was the first moment that was, you know, wow. That, what, you know, the crowd, the steel cage, you know, Alcatraz basically punctured a lung in that match.
Jeez.
From a Baldo bomb from the top of the, you know, of the top rope. Or maybe off the cage. It might even be the cage. I think it was the cage. You know, it was crazy. And, you know, Alcatraz held it in for 6 months till he was able to take a fire extinguisher and extinguish it all on Tyshawn Prince's body. You know? And, you know, that was, wow, what a moment. The best moment in a gimmick match, I guess you could say, was Brian Cage beating Matt Hardy in a TLC match to become the heavyweight champion in front of, at that time, the biggest crowd in FSW history.
Yeah.
You know, that's you know, truly a moment that will, you know, never be forgotten. You know, Chris Bay winning the FSW heavyweight championship. You know, it was a pretty emotional moment. You know, I look over, I see my kid with tears in his eyes. I see Chris with tears in his eyes. You know, I'm pretty sure I welled up at that moment.
Sure.
You know, here's a kid that started out and he was looking, and as I said, he's thrown all his eggs in one basket to be a professional wrestler. And, you know, that was the pinnacle for him in FSW. And, you know, John Moxley showing up in FSW and just seeing the crowd reaction is, to me, one of the greatest moments in FSW history. You know, and it's like there's probably so many more that offhand, you know, I can't think of. I remember a match with Funny Bone and Cutthroat Cody in the steel cage, which was a fantastic match. And Sin Bodhi was on commentary. And I remember me and Sin would go back and forth. Like, I was not really a fan of SpongeBob SquarePants or Sin Bone SquarePants or whatever they were called. That I felt Sin relied too much on the comedy stuff, and I really didn't enjoy it. To me, his money is in being the sadistic clown. And I remember in that match, after the match, he got in the steel cage, and he literally destroyed Funny Bone and brought out, you know, a few thousand tacks and just fucked Funny Bone up huge. And it was like, yeah, you know, that's the Sin that I want to see, you know, moving forward. At the FSW arena, we had a moment when Remy Marcel wrestled Tyson Tyler, who was the FSW Arizona champion. And we did the great dusty finish where Remy Marcel, you know, had Tyson Tyler pinned. 1, 2, 3. The crowd goes berserk. You could see it in like one of the old openers for our show. You know, Remy slides back against the fans who are going crazy, and he's back against the guardrail, and the crowd's going nuts, only to be told that there was a disqualification and Remy didn't win the title. So, you know, Kevin Nash walking into my ring with an FSW t-shirt. Now, he didn't do anything but walk in to cut a promo, but it was like, how surreal is this? You know, we're 1 or 2 years into doing things, and the guy I watched, you know, part of the NWO, like, yeah, he was cool in Diesel, but, you know, he made the name for himself, and he was part of the NWO, and he's wearing my shirt, cutting a promo in my ring, wrestling for the heavyweight championship.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, as a kid who was, you know, 8 or 9 years old watching Bruno Sammartino, and at 10 or 11 going to my abuela's, my great grandmother, watching Lucha Libre from the Olympic Auditorium, NWA, with Chavo Guerrero and Terry Funk and a whole bunch of other guys, you know, the kid in me was just like, wow. Like, how cool and how lucky am I?
Yeah.
Like, it, you know, I loved wrestling, but not until much later was it my dream to be like, I went from doing a radio show to like, hey, you know, I think I could run wrestling shows. The Buffalo Gym shows aren't very good. I think I can do way better. And not to toot my own horn, but the track record shows that I guess I know what I'm doing a little bit, because, you know, in 11 years, not only if we had some of the biggest stars, we had some of the biggest stars before anybody ever heard of them or thought they would be stars. When a guy like Keith Lee walks through the door, and Ricochet and Rich Swann and, you know, Kevin Cross and Hammerstone and Douglas James, and just one after the other of some that were semi-regulars in FSW, you know, Carl Fredericks, killing it in New Japan. You know, he may not be a big name yet, but I'm pretty sure he is going to be a star in New Japan for a long time.
Yep.
And it's that eye for talent, the Reno Scum. It took him a long time. Eli Drake, Brian Cage, you know, the list is endless of where our fans, who are the best in the world, will always, you know, they'll come up, like, I guess, you know, it was a year ago, Natural Born Killers.
Yeah.
And they were talking about the thing with Moxley and stuff. And, you know, so many of them say, wow, you know, that was the greatest moment I've had as a wrestling fan. And a lot of the times it wasn't their experience at a WWE show or WCW. It was right here, Future Stars of Wrestling, that they got to walk in the door. They got to meet Pentagon in Phoenix. They got to even meet Alberto Del Rio. They got to meet Moose. They got to meet Tommy Dreamer, Sammy Callahan. Like, again, for a company that relies on a lot of local talent,
yeah,
you know, it has sure done a job, you know, with bringing in, you know, the best humanly possible.
Well, on that note, as we wrap here, I just, looking through all the different matches and everything, one match stuck out to me, which is now one of those where it will live in infamy, I guess. Mecha 5, last year, you had a match between Joey Ryan and Suede Thompson.
Yeah.
When you know of what's going on now, do you think that the fans just recognize that it was entertaining, and we, you know, regardless of what is going on with the speaking out movement, that what I saw, I know I was still entertained? Does that come down to the basic thing of pro wrestling, is that I'm giving you a dollar, you're giving me something to escape into, you know, this bigger than life world?
Well, Joey Ryan is a guy who, I was never a huge fan of the gimmick, but yeah, tried and true, had him at Beers and Body Slams. People really dug the gimmick.
Yeah.
And regardless of what you say, and what he's done, which is horrific, but, you know, no offense, but people were paying $30 yep, to take a picture grabbing his penis.
Yep.
And people loved the gimmick. They lived the gimmick. Oh, Joey Ryan's awesome. So, you know, what are we doing? We're, you know, there's nothing going on. We're booking a guy who, you know, literally is one of the top five over wrestlers. You know, he's like the most t-shirts were sold on pro wrestling tees.
Right.
You yep, know, so the question now is, you know, how is he going to get work again? It's like, what is he going to do? Like, he was right, making so much money, and most of it was just by doing merchandise sales and the WrestleMania, you know, Joey Ryan penis party. Right. We had him work Santana Jackson and do stuff with him. And at the time, you know, you're just trying to provide the most entertaining match that you can. Joey was scheduled for the last show in March.
Yeah.
To right, wrestle Lacey Ryan initially, until we got Tessa Blanchard. So then we were going to move him out, and then he was unable to make it, and then he became available, but it was too late. Yeah. And, you know, there's numerous people. Some stuff has lingered on, and some people have been accused, and there's been, you know, really not a lot of proof.
Right.
To where, you know, so far, you know, they're okay. You know, crazy thing. I actually got a call today from Teddy Hart.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, Teddy called, and we've had a very good relationship.
Yeah.
And he called to let me know that he appreciates everything I had done for him. And he realizes that I still am owed money from him for a booking and flight that I had booked him, which, you know, should be the least of his concerns.
Yeah.
But he was happy to let me know that he felt all his serious charges were going to be dropped. And, you know, he was looking forward to the future. So, you know, everybody loves a redemption story.
Yeah.
You know, and in this country, and with myself, and of course, a lot of the issues were not as severe as the ones that have gone on, but I've always been somebody to give a second, third, sometimes fourth chance. Now, there's certain guys like a Sway Thompson and Owen Travers who will never get another chance.
Right.
You know, what they did was despicable, and, you know, I'm pretty sure neither one of them wants to show their face in anybody's locker room.
Yeah.
Anytime in the distant future,
yeah. Let alone near. Yeah. I mean, that's suicide. You know, and I'm glad you have that perspective, because I think that
I don't shy away from anything, whether I like it or dislike it. And we had to deal with it in our offices and in our school. And let me tell you, it wasn't fun, yeah. Because we had thought we handled it, and then all of a sudden, shit hit the fan like 4 or 5 days later.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but, you know, I like the outlook of redemption, because you're right, it's something to go ahead and see someone who can make that change and, you know, and see what they've done in the past and, you know, realize that they can be a better person moving forward. And
yeah, but let me chime in and say, I like a good redemption story, but some people just can't have that redemption.
Right.
And they're not going to get that opportunity because, you know, I'm pretty sure they're full of shit.
Yeah.
So, you know, generally I'm a good judge of character.
Yeah.
And in those situations, they weren't my favorite people. There was always something about them, but it was nothing ever major. So, and you know, a lot of stuff never came out till later. So, you know, there's certain people that we've dealt with that we've had to let go that we feel can be brought back sometime. But, you know, 3 out of 4 looks like there's no shot.
Yeah.
You know, only one of the guys we look at that we feel he's making strides to better himself as a person. And I'll be happy to say it. It's Douglas James.
Yeah.
You know,
I agree.
It was a very sad situation. And we love Doug, you know, as a person. Yeah. And he's done great business for us. So he's had some demons. And we hope he can overcome it because, you know, we feel he is somebody that, you know, it's worth hoping that he can be one of the guys who has redemption and is able to prosper. He's a young guy,
yeah,
hugely talented, and, you know, there's an incident with him. But he's not a guy that all of a sudden 15 people have called out.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, hopefully he can move past this. And, you know, he's already shown forgiveness. You know, he publicly posted it. So I'm not outing anything about Doug. But, you know, he's gone out and he's taken so far all the right steps to, you know, hopefully get an opportunity not only in FSW, but anywhere he wants to go in the future.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, you said a key word there, in the future, and it's going to be just a very interesting, you know, next 6 months, you know.
That's right. Who's going to be the next Nevada State champion?
Yeah. You know, hopefully we'll find out at an anniversary show that will happen before the year 2022.
Yes, but you know, I heard we're going to be doing a private event birthday party real soon, so we'll let our fans know about private events.
Absolutely, and please, anyone who wants to learn more about FSW, check out the website. Also, follow on social media because they're constantly posting upcoming things. And also, one of the cool things you do, Joe, is you like to get the fan feedback. And that's, you know, I think one of the coolest aspects of getting to know what your audience is looking forward to.
Well, that's why I'm so cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so...
If I had more friends like myself, I'd be a happier guy.
How many mirrors do you have in your house?
Not very many.
See? So you just got to get a couple more mirrors, and then you can hold a conversation with a guy you really like.
Well, I usually do that anyway without the mirrors. So.
Well, I appreciate it once again, everyone. The DeFalco Files, Joe DeFalco, owner and creator of FSW, Future Stars of Wrestling. Again, check them out on Fight TV, also their Twitch channel and YouTube channel. And next week, got to kind of think about, I'm trying to look into a couple things. So, regardless,
me talking about my favorite movies and songs in my life,
that and board games. So
Othello is my favorite board
game. Oh, Othello! Wow, I haven't thought about that in years.
Yeah, not that I play very many board games, but I always loved Othello. I was always good at it. I beat the wife all the time.
Well, that
she gets mad because I'm so competitive that no matter what we're playing, I'm trying to win. She blames me for having knee surgery because we were playing badminton in the backyard, and I'm trying to score a point instead of just lobbing it back and forth. And of course, you know, she twisted her knee, couldn't walk, tore her ACL, MCL, whatever it was, had knee surgery, and of course, it became my fault.
But the real question is, did you win?
Of course.
And on that note, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.